from the place where the good guys always...
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Ring Respect Radio right here on the Video Bros Network. My name is Bobby Munson, and I'm joined by the man with the angelic voice. He is Papa Smokes. Sir, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Munson. How are all my wrestling people doing out there?
Hopefully everybody's doing well, staying healthy, and looking forward to coming out to some live wrestling action. As we record this one, Papa Smokes, we know that this Saturday we have live wrestling action of our own. Prairie Pro Wrestling presents Part 5, A New Beginning. And last I checked, Papa Smokes, I think we are sold out or maybe a couple tickets left, and that's about it. If this happens to be up and running on YouTube prior to this Saturday, make sure to call any one of our sponsors. Well, I know Wendell Clark's Bar and Grill sold out of their tickets, but Bartari, Glitch Gifts, if you still have an opportunity, call them, reserve your tickets, because there is no guarantee there will be spots left if you show up at the door that night. This is a really sought-after event, Pop Smokes. People were clamoring for Prairie Pro Wrestling's return.
Well, I guess so, Munson. After the past year we've had with COVID shutdowns and all kinds of things in effect, we haven't been able to go to hardly any live events, including music and theater and all that kind of stuff too. So all our wrestling fans have been dying to have a show, and we've been kind of waiting a little bit to put on this comeback PPW show for when we were sure that we could have a full crowd and have our fans still be safe here. So it's been a long wait. It's been damn near 2 years, and I feel the same way. Can't wait to get back to live wrestling action.
Yeah, it's going to be excellent. Looking forward to seeing all of you that are going to be able to make it out there. For those of you who won't be able to join us live and in person, don't worry. We've got you covered. As always, your Video Bros right here will be behind the cameras, making sure that everybody, the action is taped, recorded, and ready for YouTube down the road. So you will get your opportunity to check out the Prairie Pro Wrestling Part 5, A New Beginning, when we release it on YouTube. In the meantime, though, if you want to get caught up on previous matches from Prairie Pro Wrestling, we have those all up and on YouTube, and just dropped another set of four matches from our championship tournament that were taped back in March 2020 before the shutdown. Those matches doing really well, very popular and very receptive on YouTube. A lot of people checking those out, so if you haven't done so already, check them out there. And before we get started with the show today, we're going to ask you to go ahead, click the subscribe button down below if you haven't done so already. Hit the notification bell so you know anytime we release new material right here on the Video Bros Network. Also, we want to get you to check out our good friends at Backbreaker Media. Backbreaker Media have been a very good supporter and sponsor of Ring Respect Radio. So check them out on all different media outlets, and our good friends at the Canadian Wrestling Network as well, too. Papa Smokes, it's time we get back to some reviews and recaps. We had to call some matches last week, so we missed out on MLW Fusion Alpha Episode 4. So we're going to give them 4 and 5 here on one edition of Ring Respect Radio. So we're going to start with MLW Fusion Alpha Episode number 4. And they kicked this one off in high gear, I'd have to say, Papa Smokes. So this one started off with a match in the ring right away. We're getting two guys that are scheduled to be in the Opera Cup tournament, but this was not one of the opening matches of the Opera Cup. We're getting to see the MLW debut of Lee Moriarty, as he's taking on heavyweight hustle Calvin Tankman. Now, I gotta say, before we even get into the match itself, I had a bit of an issue here, because Lee Moriarty, I've seen, has now gone over to AEW, and I watch the occasional match with AEW. I find it hard to watch any full programming from them, as you would know, two Papa Smokes. Neither one of us can sit down and watch a full show. So I haven't really seen much from Lee Moriarty. I just knew a lot of AEW fans were ranting and raving about him. So maybe I was not sure what I was going to expect from this guy, if we were going to see a bunch of, you know, false finishes and move after move of just things that shouldn't really be able to have a guy get back up from. But this was not that. And this was a lot better than that. I have to say, I really enjoyed what Lee Moriarty brought to the table, at least in MLW. But it also helped that he was in against Calvin Tankman, who I think has done great work in MLW and has been fantastic. What are your thoughts, especially on Lee Moriarty making his debut?
I had a similar feeling about Lee Moriarty. I had heard and read some stuff online about him. Same thing, that he was highly touted as a new guy in AEW, but I hadn't really seen much of his stuff yet. I have to start off by saying, what an extremely weird intro and walk to the ring he had. He had that mask on and he had his headphones on and he was kind of dancing, but it kind of seemed like he was taken over by a set of spasms as well. And once he got into the ring, he kind of had a thing going on where it seemed like whatever was coming through his earphones was kind of scaring him or discombobulating him. I don't know what that whole thing is all about, but it struck me as weird. At least it's a unique entrance. But Lee Moriarty, I thought, looked pretty good in this match. You can see he's fully embraced the new style of wrestling, if you want to call it that. He uses a lot of high spots. He uses a lot of aerial maneuvers and stuff like that. But this match was still laid out pretty nicely. It was the classic smaller guy against the bigger, stronger guy. And I thought they set this match up pretty well with some back and forth between the two.
And a lot more aggression out of Calvin Tankman than what we saw prior to the end of last season with MLW. I found that in this match, they were showing Calvin Tankman as a much more aggressive guy. Maybe not in the opening few minutes of the matchup. They kind of had it where he was thrown off by the young guy, the new guy, kind of taking him a little bit by surprise. And I say young and new, but Calvin Tankman himself isn't old or anything like that. He's just been in the company a little bit longer. And, you know, the great thing about this one, too, I think these guys know each other really well. We know from PBW, UWFI, which our good buddy Robert Martyrs talked highly about and sent us matches from, that both Lee Moriarty and Calvin Tankman came from there and have worked together before. So you could really sense how comfortable they were working with each other in this particular matchup. There was some great spots. As you said, yeah, Lee Moriarty definitely has embraced what, you know, a lot of people like about the modern day wrestling. And I think that's why a lot of the AEW fans are ranting and raving about this young guy. I think that a lot can be said about how much more grounded I'm pretty sure that he was here than he would be over there. I guess I'd have to go check that out to really get a true view of that for myself. But I just feel like working with Tankman in this environment in MLW worked really well. A great match from the two of them. Calvin getting the big win here. But again, not making Lee look bad. Lee really put up a fight, and both of them look strong going into their first-round matchups of the Opera Cup tournament, and this could even be a preview of our finale of the Opera Cup.
Yeah, for sure. And the commentators throughout the match told us a little bit about Lee Moriarty, including his particular style, which he calls Taiga style. You remember the Wu-Tang albums, Munson, with that Taiga style?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's kind of like a fusion between martial arts styles and professional wrestling styles, which he's made to fit his own in-ring style. So that's kind of neat. It's a good thing. This match was pretty okay, I thought. Neither wrestler in this ended up looking weaker after it. Moriarty still looked good after that loss. There's a couple of nice big spots in this. Do you remember when they were fighting outside the ring and Tankman gave Moriarty a power bomb onto the ring apron? That was a nice spot. And then there was a part two where Tankman was on his knees leaning through the ropes, and he ended up power slamming Moriarty on the apron as well. That was a very unique and creative spot as well. So. And the other part I liked was the finish, the Tankman driver, the way Calvin just completely overpowered Lee Moriarty and got him up into that suplex, kind of vertical suplex position, and then into the driver. And wow, that just looked fantastic. And crowd really popped for the ending of this match. And Tankman looking awesome. That's the kind of win that he needed to look convincing going into the first round of the Opera Cup.
Yeah, and it seems like as things are starting to unfold, and we'll get into it more, it seems like there's a lot of story being built around Tankman and the Opera Cup here. So it starts with the aftermath of this particular match. So King Mo and Alex Kane came down to the ring apron. They're standing there being interviewed by Alicia Toot. They're taking a look at Calvin Tankman. King Mo looking like he's looking to recruit more to come over to his side. But we also have to keep in mind that Alex Kane was actually named as a standby in the Opera Cup tournament. So as much as it seems like they could be scouting Tankman, they could also be scouting for taking somebody out closer towards the final, allowing Alex Kane an easy way in towards, say, the semifinal or the final of the Opera Cup tournament itself.
Well, that's an interesting theory, Munson. I wonder if there's anything to that, too, because You notice MLW has never really named anybody that's a extra or a standby backup in the Opera Cup. So perhaps this has some meaning to the Ultimate storyline. I like your theory. We'll have to see if that comes true.
For sure.
Moving on from there, we had a promo from everybody's favorite promo maker, Joseph Samael. And man, did I like this one a lot. I mean, like them all a lot, but two belts, one leg. That's what he referred to Hammerstone. He said they took the ultimate prize despite Fatu losing the MLW World Heavyweight Champion. They destroyed Hammerstone is the key point, focal point here. And the challenge is laid down. They want the War Chamber match. Joseph Samael wants Contra versus Hammerstone and whoever he can muster up at the War Chamber. Thoughts on this one?
Well, I liked this a lot. I love all of Joseph Samael's work on the microphone. And again, this was another one where he has some poetic, apocalyptic sounding stuff. I like the way he referred to Contra. He says, cut off one head and two grow back. And it's just such a great mythological image of the Hydra. You know, you can battle it. You can have the hero Perseus battle it, but every time he cuts off one head, two grow back. So it's the ever present monster that is Contra unit. And Samael just sells this stuff so great.
He really does. So going on from there, heading to backstage to another bit of a promo here. We're in Cesar Duran's office. Hammerstone comes walking in, holding both championship belts. And we've been asking ourselves what would happen once the two belts were around one guy. Would they continue on as a double champion? Would a belt get relinquished? What was going to be the outcome? And here was our answer. Hammerstone comes in. He makes a mention that the winning of the National Openweight Championship was the greatest moment in his entire career until he won the MLW World Heavyweight Champion. Hammerstone knows that the National Openweight Championship deserves to have somebody that competitively can defend it and carry on the legacy of it that he started. And he hands back the title to Cesar Duran. But Cesar Duran also then puts it back on Hammerstone that the challenge has been laid down by Contra for the War Chamber. It's time to start finding a team.
Yeah, and well, one thing I wanted to say right off the bat, Munson, is just how weird Cesar Duran's office looks. With those weird lights and the punching bag and the couch and the pinups all over the wall, it kind of looks like a teenage boy's bedroom. But other than that, I'm not going to go on about his office. But yeah, an interesting conversation between Hammerstone and Duran. Again, we see that kind of slippery, heelish nature. We're not sure if he's a complete heel because he's kind of making some concessions towards the babyface as well. It's just all the mystery that is Cesar Duran. We don't know who he is. We don't know what he's up to exactly yet. But we have our suspicions that he's on the dark side.
Yeah, and his bringing up his office is a good point. It's very reminiscent of the same image that his office had when he was over in Lucha Underground as well, too. So it seems like they've brought that element over as well. So again, some of that Lucha Underground stuff is coming over into MLW. But as we were talking before this went on the air, things are starting to unfold and work, and it seems to be that some of the aspects that really did work with Lucha Underground are the points that Court Bauer and MLW have taken and put together in such a beautiful way, and it's working out quite nicely. So from there, after this particular backstage segment, we went to Alicia Toot, who has a special exclusive feature on the scandals with Cesar Duran. She's got footage of his last night in Boyle Heights, and then also footage of a woman who is in the office and stuff like that. Who is she, Papa Smokes? Let's see. Do you have any inclination as to who it could have been?
Well, I just assumed that it was Selena De La Renta when they were having their problems before. We knew that at that time, the mysterious El Jefe, before we knew it was Cesar Duran, that he had something on De La Renta, and she was concerned and upset about this. So when we saw this woman looking through his office searching for something, I got the feeling that that was Selena De La Renta trying to find whatever it is that Duran holds over her. But we never get a good look at who she is, so I guess we're left to speculate for now. But an interesting expose put up there by Alicia, too, and really like making Duran look quite guilty of a lot of crimes, not only against wrestling, but criminal crimes as well. They talk that he was he's aligned with some of the cartels and other money laundering and other kinds of criminal activities and fraud and extortion and stuff like that. So I guess we're going to see what happens from this, but it makes me fear for Alicia too, making this damning expose about her boss right now, and we'll have to see where this goes.
And it makes you wonder, okay, now the woman in the video, Selena De La Renta, is kind of where my mind had gone to from this whole thing. It makes you wonder, is this the last we ever saw of her? They made it believe that at the end of last season, this was the last we'd ever see of her. And again, I'm starting to question if that's the case. Maybe it was her herself that leaked out this footage and this information to her supposed frenemy, Alicia, too. There is very much that possibility. Alicia had to have got her story from somewhere. Somebody had been leaking something, and maybe that was who it was. But yeah, definitely a great segment. Really starts to paint a bigger picture of Cesar Duran. So we'll see how that starts to unfold in the coming weeks. Next, we had a promo done by Tom Lawler talking about Davey Richards, the two of them going to be taking on each other in the main event, round one of the Opera Cup. Is there anything more to say than this is exactly what it needed to be? Tom Lawler is well-spoken. This matchup is going to be a great first-round matchup in the Opera Cup as well, too. I liked it exactly what it needed to be. It was short, to the point, and everything that needed to be said got said in this little bit of time.
Yeah, completely agreed. It's setting up for our main event tonight, and well done by Lawler.
For sure. So finally, back to in-ring action after that. It's the featherweight division, which we've had a look in previously on MLW Fusion Alpha. This week, we're getting Brittany Blake taking on the other half of the C-Stars, Delmi EXO. This one, Papa Smokes, I'd have to say I was not sure what to think coming into it, but Brittany Blake has a good look. I think she's got some decent skill. I think that there is going to be some good stuff out of her. I think I was even more impressed with Delmi EXO, actually. It's a lot more incredible wrestling that I saw out of her. Some nice different wrestling holds. And also, you know, like she had that nice snap fisherman suplex in there and stuff, too. There was some really, really, really good wrestling from Delmi EXO. And having no preconceived notion of her work from prior to this matchup, I like what I saw.
Yeah, I like what I saw, too. I wasn't totally crazy about this match, and I think it might have been because I thought that Brittany Blake looked okay, but she looks still pretty green in the ring, I thought. I was kind of torn. She has a nice, slower style. She's not too busy. She's not frantically running around trying to remember spots, trying to get everything in. Like, she looks cool and collected, and yet her style seems to lack a certain something where it just, some of her strikes and some of her moves looked like she was kind of just dialing it in or going through the motions a little bit. I don't know, but I'm not trying to criticize her negatively completely like that, but again, I think this featherweight division is a work in progress. I think these ladies will get more comfortable with the whole thing as it goes along. But Delmi EXO, yeah, I have to agree with you there. She's looking good. Also a big, strong, athletic girl. That's part of it too. She looked very convincing as a lady wrestler, not one of these little petite models like they have in a lot of companies these days. She's a big, strong, strapping girl, and she's very athletic and can do all her moves. So out of this match, the main thing I took was that Delmi EXO looking really good and for the future.
That's kind of where I was at, too. And I didn't want to say too much on the negative side or anything like that. Again, Brittany Blake's got time. But, you know, I think the thing that surprised me the most is that when I was looking into all these different women that are going to be partaking in the featherweight division, and it seemed to me like Brittany Blake had the most time in the industry, so she had the most experience overall from any of them. But yet, so far out of everybody that we've been introduced to up until this point, and also with the next episode that we'll talk about in a little bit, she actually seems to be, like, to me, looking like the most green in there, like you were mentioning, too. Again, it could be an issue with comfortability. This, again, having worked where she's worked, she hasn't been in front of that size of audience or in front of a television audience at this point. It could be some of those early jitters, or maybe the chemistry just isn't there with Delmi Exo in a one-on-one competition. So we'll have to see as Brittany Blake unfolds with some of the other women in the division how it goes about. But we want to speak about strong, strapping women that are being pushed to the moon right now in the featherweight division. Backstage, an interview with Willow Nightingale. Man, is she being heavily featured every single week right now. And I'm not against it. She's got charisma. She was good inside the ring in her debut matchup. I think that they're making the right move, taking a gamble, pushing Willow Nightingale.
Have to agree there, too. She's got the entire package for what they're looking for maybe the first ladies champion, someone to represent, excuse me, the new featherweight title and all that. She has a good look. She has a strong look. She's strong in the ring. She has a nice smile. She's a perfect baby face. So I think this is a good choice. She's also quite well-spoken, as we'll find out on the next episode as well. But I think she has all the pieces to be a popular ladies featherweight champion in MLW.
I really do, too. So it's good to see that that push is happening. And we're going to definitely see a lot more out of Willow Nightingale in the weeks to come. Speaking about people in MLW, this is the news that was dropped. We mentioned it on the show before. Will Ospreay is going to be making his MLW debut, and it's going to happen in December. So they're looking at a December debut for Will Ospreay in an MLW ring. Not sure in what aspect or who he's going to be taking on at this time, but that is the news that we have so far. I mean, this is big news for anybody who's a big fan of Will Ospreay. I've seen lots of Will Ospreay matches, some good, some, you know, it depends on the opponent and stuff like that too. But I think MLW could be the right atmosphere with the right opponents here for Will Ospreay. Looking forward to seeing where they'll go with it. And you know what? He's not the only one that's joining. I mean, they've got a whole slew of new people that they've signed that we haven't seen the debuts of yet. There's news dropped that Homicide is coming to the War Chamber. They've signed him. And also, this one's going to be one of the most fun, but the realest man in the room, Enzo Amore, Papa Smokes, he's coming to MLW. Now, I got a lot of eye rolling when I was on Sunday Brunch for Love Wrestling this week when I brought up Enzo Amore could join an MLW. But I'll say it again, just like I did on there. The guy is a well-known individual from his run in WWE. He is stellar on a microphone and can get under people's skin quite easily. He's going to put eyes on the MLW product, and say what you will about his in-ring work. The reason I think that most people are pissy towards his in-ring work is because he's not doing 100,000 acrobatic moves and a bunch of false finishes or anything like that. He's kind of a straightforward dude in the ring. He's nothing flashy, nothing fancy. It's a pretty standard wrestling, but he's got a character and a gimmick that backs it up. And man, can he talk.
Yeah, and he's the perfect kind of chicken shit heel, so to speak, as people like to call them. It's not in his persona to get up on the top and do shooting star presses and do all kinds of flips and acrobatics and stuff like that. It just isn't. He's the kind of guy that gets in the ring, wants to win the match, but he's going to do it in a defensive manner because he's a coward, right? And that's the way it goes. You remember in the big company when he had the cruiserweight title for a while, amongst a roster of all these guys that can do all this stuff, and it was Amore that was holding the belt for so long. No one could believe it, but it was hilarious, and it made the chase so better for the Callistos and the whoever else were chasing him for the belt all that time. That we know that all these baby faces are better wrestlers than him, but try and take that belt off him, he's just not having it. I think Enzo is a good character to bring into MLW. Like you say, an awesome talker. He will have the crowd eating out of the palm of his hand when he's on the mic. His ring work is whatever, but I think it's sufficient to what his character suggests. And I'm very curious to see what they'll do with him. There's a few people that spring to mind that might be nice opponents for him, but it's a wild card. We'll have to see what Court Bauer and Cesar Duran have for Enzo Amore.
Yeah, well, bada boom. Hopefully it'll be the most consensual penis in the room when he shows up in MLW. Moving on from there. So anyway, we had backstage Akuro Kwan taking a dive out of nowhere, trying to take out Alexander Hammerstone, but he is absolutely caught midair by the judge, EJ Nduka, who then tosses Akuro Kwan over like he's some sort of rag doll. gives him a few kicks, and then him and Hammer buddy up. Hammer asks Anduka to be on his team for the War Chamber, and Anduka doesn't resist that opportunity. I mean, I think I saw this one coming a little bit when they said Hammer had to find guys. We know that Richard Holiday is the obvious fit to go alongside Hammer. I think EJ Anduka, with the way they're pushing him and what they want to do with him, it was a no-brainer to have him get in there. It seemed like he was ready to start taking on Contra as well, too. So perfect fitting, nice little segment. It worked. I'm still curious to see, is Hammerstone going to be able to compete in the chamber? Because my understanding was an 8-week recovery from Fightland, which was at the beginning of October. War Chamber films in November here at Papa Smokes. Will Hammerstone be ready to be able to go in there? I know he's got a lot of muscle to back him up, but man, Contra is one hell of a unit to be taken on, especially when you're hobbling on one leg.
And they said that he has a hairline fracture of his ankle too. That's no joke as a injury, and he'll have some serious healing to do and rehab to do in the meantime. Can they tape him up? Can they get him secure in his boots so that it's not going to injure him further? We don't know this yet. And how about Contra unit, knowing that that ankle and foot are compromised? Will they just go after that like mad dogs throughout the whole match? And that could be disastrous for Hammerstone and his heavyweight title reign. So yeah, more question marks about that. And Hammer will need a third partner for his four-man team. I don't think we know who that's going to be yet either. So I love this pairing of Hammerstone and Anduka, though. I mean, just look at those two guys standing next to each other, and you just have to say, how could they possibly be beaten? Just these two Greek gods of men, gigantic muscle guys, and it's looking good for them towards War Chamber.
It really is. Hopefully they can make it there in one piece. Up next, we had a promo from Davey Richard talking about Tom Lawler. Again, you know, just like I said with the Tom Lawler one from earlier, Davey Richards making his point, making really strong points. Looking forward to this one. This is going to be a solid matchup. Davey Richards, again, there's no flash about his promos. There's nothing, you know, unique about him character-wise. He's just a fucking good wrestler, and he talks like a good wrestler. That's exactly what I want out of a guy like Davey Richards, and probably why I've loved this progressive push that we're getting out of him since joining MLW.
Yeah, and Davey Richards is kind of like the meat and potatoes of professional wrestlers. There's nothing fancy about him whatsoever. He has no gimmick. He has no bells and whistles around his character, no costumes, no anything like that. He's just straight ahead dude, studied jiu-jitsu for a long time, studied professional wrestling for a long time, has had a great career in various companies as a tag team wrestler and as a single. But he's just one of those guys. I'm the best at what I do, and I'll train and outwork my opponents every single time as much as I can. Nice guy, humble, hardworking dude. I mean, that's like the Dusty Rhodes of his era, kind of just the working man's hero. It's, again, he doesn't need shades or pink leather pants or anything like that. He just comes out and does his stuff. I think there's a whole lot of fans that appreciate that kind of thing out of a pro wrestler.
Yeah, and he doesn't need the Daisy Duke cutoffs either, but we'll find out how he does against those in the main event. Before we get to that main event, though, Cesar Duran came out to, we went backstage to find out that he says he will not confirm nor deny the scandal allegations against him, but more on that will unfold in the next episode. So let's get right to that main event. Tom Lawler versus Davey Richards. This is the 2021 Opera Cup. For anybody who's tuning into our show for the first time or hasn't seen MLW, the Opera Cup, again, was a cup that was presented in opera houses back in the day and wrestling. I believe, was it 1939, the last time that the Opera Cup was officially won? And that was by the legendary Stu Hart. It was brought back to MLW when Davey Boy Smith Jr. had found that in the old Hart family, and it's been nice and restored. I believe this is the third incarnation of the MLW's version of the Opera Cup now, Pop Smokes. And yeah, what a lineup we've got. And, man, this opening match, Tom Lawler versus Davey Richards. Now, we were a little critical about a couple of the spots with Tom Lawler recently against Alexander Hammerstone. We said maybe he was being played safe because they had the big match coming up with Hammer and Fatu. We also questioned about whether it was a little slick in the arena that night. Seemed like a couple of spots had been slipped on a little bit. This was not that at all. In fact, it was quite the opposite of that. This was... exactly what I expected it to be. Two solid wrestling guys, two mat grapplers, two hold makers that were going to go back and forth, taking those submissions to each other. And man, did they take it to each other. This was a great wrestling match from start to finish. The ending was fantastic. I even liked the way it all went down with Tom flipping the bird, passing out. This to me was a piece of gold for a main event. I liked this one quite a lot.
I got to agree with you there. That when this match first started, I was kind of noticing that the crowd didn't seem to be into it too much, but that changed over the course of this match too. They started out nice and slow, lockups, mat grappling, all kinds of holds, trading of holds and reversals. I like that stuff personally. I like it when a match will start with some wrestling. We get to see the skill of each guy. Sometimes you don't even know if one or the other of the wrestler is a good mat wrestler, but then when a match starts like that, they get to show off a little bit, to get to see their skill. Both of these guys, obviously well-trained grapplers on the mat. There was some stuff that went to the outside. There was a nice guillotine choke by Lawler, which, while Richards was in the hold, grabbed Lawler's ankle and applied an ankle lock. That was kind of neat. Two submission holds on at the same time. Richards hit Lawler with everything he had for a while there and was only getting two counts. Hit him with the double stomp off the top. That couldn't finish him off. But then we all know that Davey Richards likes to use that ankle lock, the similar ankle lock that Kurt Angle used as his bread and butter. And eventually, as he said, the nice finish took a while for Lawler to actually succumb to this hold, but he tried everything to get to the ropes. Richards, having none of it, got him right in the middle, sunk in the hold, and Lawler, without the tap, just basically passed out. And about a 13-minute match, which was nice. Didn't need 20 minutes, didn't need 15 minutes. But a 12 or 13-minute match here as an opening round Opera Cup match, yeah, quite sufficient, I thought. They all did lots of stuff. It was a back-and-forth match. The momentum went both ways, and then we got to see a nice submission, or I should say a pass-out finished at the end there, and Davey Richards moves on to round two of the Opera Cup.
So now that we've talked about Davey Richards winning, I want to talk about a little bit of the elephant in the room before we talk about what happened right at the end of this episode. Now, I had to look into this because we've seen them come back to this MLW thing. Tom Lawler was ranked, what, number two on the PWI rankings all throughout the reopen of MLW and stuff like that. This guy's been heavily featured as one of the top MLW guys, but we've seen him coming up short as of late. And I wondered a little bit about this because I know that he's been applying his craft over in New Japan Pro Wrestling, going all over the world right now. So I found out that his contract is coming up with MLW, and it looks like he is not re-signing his contract with them. It's not a personal vendetta against them. He doesn't hate the company, but it looks like that is what he's doing. He's putting guys over on his way out of MLW, and he's going to go and continue to apply his craft in New Japan Pro Wrestling and around the world. All I got to say is thank you for what you've given to MLW there, Filthy Tom, and I will continue to seek out your matches elsewhere because you've done excellent work. So anything to add on that? No, Paul Smokes.
No, it's disappointing if that's true, but I also noticed that he had another MMA fight recently, not with the UFC that he used to be with, that he's now critical of, but with another federation of MMA fighters, and he lost his fight. But the fact that he still wants to train and get into a cage for a real MMA fight shows that his mind is elsewhere to a certain extent too, and maybe he wants to continue MMA fighting while he still can. But I'll be sorry to see him go if he leaves MLW.
Certainly so. So continue on with the last bit. So that was the main event of the show, but this wasn't the end of MLW Fusion Alpha episode 4, surprisingly. So backstage, we go back to Cesar Duran's office. Richard Holiday walks in, who then refers to him as Caesar Duran. And then when he's corrected, he starts calling him Cesar. Cesar Duran.
Yeah.
This was very in character for Richard Holliday and quite comical. I enjoyed it. You could tell the frustration that was growing on the face of Cesar Duran. He then starts talking about the expose that Alicia Tu had done and implying that that is Richard Holliday's girlfriend and that she shouldn't have done that. As a result, he says that Holliday should be a defending champion of the Caribbean Championship, and he is officially making a match for next episode of MLW Fusion Alpha, where he will defend the Caribbean Championship against King Muertes. This is going to be huge, Bob Smokes.
Yeah, and can't you just see setup written all over this? I don't think Duran appreciated Holiday's demeanor towards him, which was, Holiday looks down his nose at almost everybody, and he did that to Duran, too. Duran ain't going to like that. And I worry for Holiday's safety in this match next week against King Muertes, because I sense a setup.
You really do, yeah. And just when you think this was the end of the episode, all of a sudden there was breaking news outside in the parking lot. Well, I believe this is the same camera guy that went and followed 5150 when they were going for a little of the Dr. Smoke's little medication there. But it seems like they've got a cameraman by name now. I didn't quite catch his name. I apologize for that. But he got some exclusive footage of Injustice back in the parking lot, talking about 5150 and their victory that they pulled on Injustice. And before you know it, all of a sudden 5150 come rolling up in what looks to be a soccer mom rental car, and they all jump out, but they beat the living shit out of Injustice. I love the segment. I think the car maybe should have stayed out of the picture a little bit. It didn't seem very fitting character-wise for them, but otherwise that split in hairs, Papa Smokes. I thought the segment was good to continue on this this battle and pushing 5150 as the more aggressive, strong team in MLW.
Yeah, absolutely. 5150 heard their names getting slagged out there in the parking garage, and they were just not having it. And plus, they're the new faces on the tag team scene in MLW, so they want to make an impact. And Injustice is a logical team for them to start out against. So, you know, why even keep it in the ring? They already, LAX already beat Injustice in the ring last episode, but here the assault continues, and they laid the boots to Myron Reed, and then and were slamming Jordan Oliver's head into the cement pillar there too, which looked pretty violent. And and then it was back into the Kia or the Hyundai or whatever kind of car they had, and they were out of there. But I like the booking of LAX. They're looking great in this, and I'm frankly excited to see what's to come for them. I find it difficult to believe they would have a heel versus heel segment for the tag team titles against Lost Parks, but you never really know, because wrestling's different nowadays. They have more of those heel versus heel matches, so yeah, we'll see, but I it looks like they're getting a strong push. It looks like they'll be in the tag team title picture in no time.
Well, everybody hates each other when they're chasing gold. That's what it seems like. But that was episode 4. I would have to say longer than usual episode, but a very strong episode I enjoyed. Moving on to episode 5, MLW Fusion episode 5. That came the week afterwards, and we start things off. This was going to be big, the Caribbean Championship up first. We got Richard Holliday taking on King Muertes. So we're going to get this one underway. Holliday's music hits, and all of a sudden, he's a no-show. So they say that, I believe that Rich Bocchini made a mention that it must have been some audio problems or something like that. They start playing the music again. And once again, Holliday does not appear. And I'm thinking to myself at this point, I'm like, if he's not getting his ass handed to him backstage right now, this is not in the right vein, because even though Holiday's got a bit of arrogance about him, they've been trying to play him off like a bit of a babyface as of late, and this was starting to get boos from the crowd, and I can't imagine it would have been the proper way to go to have the crowd hating Holliday for choosing not to come out to the ring. We would find out that, that's exactly what was happening. He was having his ass handed to him backstage. Mods Kruger and Akira Kwan beating the living piss out of Holliday there, up until the point where Hammerstone come in for the save. One thing I'll mention, I mean, maybe this is just the editor in me, Papa Smokes, but this what drove me crazy is a lot of these things are figured out and filmed prior to actual events happening. So when we see Hammerstone come in for saves like this, there is a no sell on the ankle because there is no fractured ankle at the time of doing the putting this segment together, as far as I can tell anyway. Unless Hammerstone is just that tough and he totally can walk that way on an ankle like that. I think that a lot of these segments were filmed beforehand to that, and it's kind of tough to get around that when it comes to editing, and that's just the editor in me picking up on shit like that, and I wish I didn't sometimes, but just my thoughts. But you know, this was okay way to start. Again, you're building sympathy for Holiday. Would we get to see this match after all? In the end, we're gonna find out as things went on. What are your thoughts as MLW Fusion Alpha 5 opened up?
Well, first of all, you have to acknowledge that the backstage area of MLW is much more dangerous than the ring, isn't it? Because there's so many attacks, so many fights in the back that the cameraman can barely keep up with it. But I hear you about the continuity, about Hammerstone's injury and all that, especially when they've decided to make the injury part of the storyline kind of thing too. They probably should be making him look vulnerable at this point, maybe on a crutch or two or something like that. But, you know, what are you going to do? They're trying to build some heat for War Chamber, the 4-on-4 matchup. They need to get the guys involved. So this is what we're going to do, have some guys fight in the back. And Holiday getting jumped by Mads Kruger and Akira Kwan. Took a licking. When the camera got on him, he was down. They were kicking him in the gut. They were kicking him in the head. So what will this have to do with our main event tonight? Will Holiday be able to compete at some point later in this show? I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, so that match definitely up in the air. We're not sure about that one, but we got right on to the next match of the evening. So it's the featherweight division. It's Nicole Savoy taking on Holiday, who was there with Dr. Dax, I believe his name is, that she brought out on a chain to ringside. And as we were talking about before, the push of Willow Nightingale continues on commentary for this one. And at first I was like, interesting choice. I was curious to see how Willow Nightingale would hold herself together during an entire portion of the show on commentary, because you see it time and time again, wrestlers getting on commentary. It's not an easy thing to do, even if they are a good speaker in terms of their ability on a microphone talking a wrestling promo. It doesn't always translate the same to doing commentary and stuff. Willow Nightingale seemed extremely comfortable here, in my opinion, and I think she did a great job. We'll get to the match in a minute, but thoughts on Willow on commentary?
Yeah, I agree with what you said completely, because it's one thing to have a wrestler on commentary. They can have 3, 4, 5, 6 important points that they want to make throughout one match, but if that match is 12 or 15 minutes long, that's a lot of time. And as you and I know, it's not always easy to fill up all that time with interesting and funny things to say. Having said that, Willow Nightingale, I thought, also sounded very comfortable on commentary. She's a nice, friendly, breezy, uplifting kind of girl, and she sounds nice. She doesn't have anything mean to say about anybody, but she's also firm in that she wants to establish her spot in the featherweight division. But this was a nice piece, and we've never really seen guest commentators on MLW before. Not sure if they do the commentary live with the matches or afterwards or not, but in this Philadelphia taping, she was sitting in the booth with the guys live. So a very nice touch, and she did a good job.
Yeah, she really did. Before the match got started, though, we also got a promo from Nicole Savoy. One thing I will say, and again, this is not a big slight against Nicole Savoy, because I think her ring work is great. Her promo needs a little bit more oomph. It was there. She can talk. It needs to feel a little bit more like she means it kind of thing. I think it's just a couple of steps back where she needs to push herself to make it sound more like she's about to just go in there and mop the floor with her opponent. It seemed a little too friendly, I guess. And with Willow Nightingale, the friendliness works. With Nicole Savoy, because she's kind of a submission specialist and a mat wrestler and stuff like that, I wanted to hear a little bit more of that ass kicker in her and stuff like that. And I think that will come. It'll come with experience. Before we talk about the match itself, your thoughts on her promo?
Yeah, I agree with you too. She sounded a little too laid back, and I want to hear some more fire from her, but maybe she needs a storyline to be developed. Maybe she needs a feud, an enemy, etc., in order to get that fire going within her. I think it'll come along also.
Well, maybe call it a happy accident, but by the end of this match, it almost seems like she will have something to play off of. So the match itself, I enjoyed this one. Obviously, Holodead, she's got a great look. We know that she can work really well. She's been tag team with Thunder Rosa for years. Dr. Dax on the outside, interesting individual. I wonder where that's going to lead to, and
Yeah.
if we're going to see him involved in an MLW ring as well too, or if he's just going to be down at the side of Holodead. But Holodead, very much the aggressor in this match, but Nicole Savoy, a great submission specialist, especially being that I believe when I checked, it's only been a couple of years that she's been involved in the business. So considering her very small amount of time in the business, I'd say she's picking up some things really well. I think that there will be great development from her, and I can see why there is this push to have her towards the top. It is a shame that she did pick up an injury in here, and much like Hammerstone, be up to about 8 weeks or so that I hear that she could be out for. But again, this could be exactly what she needs. Getting injured by somebody that's aggressive like Holodead in this first matchup. Yeah, she won, but Holodead still walked away on her own 2 feet. There's a story to be told there when Nicole Savoy comes back, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it was kind of weird. I had to rewind the finish of this match and watch again because it appears that Savoy's injury occurred during the finish when she was delivering that last suplex and arm submission. She had some kind of a triangle arm lock on Holodead. Holodead gave the verbal submission, not the tap out, but as Holodead rolled out of the ring and stuff, we could see that Savoy was not getting up, in some distress. And then they had the doctor and the extra referees come out checking on her, and she didn't look too good. You could see that fear in her eyes of what's wrong with me. They tried to get her up one time, and she was like, "No, I can't stand up." So I'm not exactly sure what happened. I watched it twice, but something folded on her, and she didn't feel comfortable standing up or getting up. So we had that kind of uncomfortable moment on wrestling when you have to leave the camera has to leave the ring area, and we still don't have her on her feet yet. So all the best out to Nicole Savoy. I hope she isn't hurt too badly. I hope she can come back. This is kind of a setback on your first match in the new company in the new featherweight division, but this isn't ballet, and stuff happens during every match. So yeah, just all the best to her, and have a quick comeback.
I think sympathy will be on the side of Savoy when she does come back from this injury. The nice thing is it makes Holodead seem like more of a badass than she already did. And then we would get to see more of that on display shortly afterwards because Willow Nightingale would cross paths with Holodead on the way out. And man, did Holodead give a beat down to Willow Nightingale. And again, building sympathy for their push of a babyface in Willow Nightingale. She takes a DDT to the apron. She's laid out flat by Holodead. Holodead looks completely like the monster heel that she should in this division. And that, I believe, is the direction they're going to go. Holodead is going to be their number one heel in this division for now, especially. And Willow Nightingale, clearly, especially now with Nicole Savoy on the sidelines for a while, is clearly going to be the top babyface. I could clearly see this being a matchup that could lead to, I mean, I do know that they've got the match cut signed and coming up soon enough, but I believe that down the road, this is going to be what we might see when it comes down to crowning the first featherweight champion in MLW.
And how perfect for Holodead to come back with too, and yet to she can say in the future, "Yeah, you may have gotten the win just barely in our first match, but I was the one that walked out, and I left you laying there." It builds upon a feud that could have legs in the months to come.
It really did. So this was a great segment. Loved it. Great job by MLW and the featherweight division. The women continuing to show what they're made of. Up next, we're backstage. Richard Holiday gives an update saying that even though the doctors say he's not clear to fight, he says he's clear to fight. So as far as we're concerned, the main event now is back on, and Richard Holiday will be defending the Caribbean Championship against King Muertes after all. Right after that, we went back to in-ring action. So a lot of in-ring action on this episode of MLW Fusion Pop Smokes. We're back to the Opera Cup, round one, Matt Cross tanking on Calvin Tankman. It's been a guest on commentary, King Mo on commentary for this one. And I got to say, King Mo, maybe not as collected as Willow Nightingale on the commentary team, but he made his points perfectly right in this case. He says he's scoping out Tankman, but as Tankman is getting the match taken to him off the start here by Matt Cross, Mo says, hey, maybe I'm not here just for Tankman. Maybe I'm checking out Matt Cross at the same time. And if Matt Cross continues to throw hits at Tankman like he is here today, maybe that's who I need to be talking to instead of Calvin Tankman. Great from King Mo. The match itself, I thought, was good. I mean, I maybe was a little bit critical of Matt Cross versus Jacob Fatu, again, because the clear putting it on the night before, the Fightland matchup kind of took away from the aura of will Matt Cross upset Fatu, even though I think in the back of our mind we would have known anyway. This was different, definitely so, and I think we got to see Matt Cross better displayed in this here matchup. And again, Tankman getting an opportunity to fight another very experienced wrestler, putting on a nice experienced matchup. And again, the aggression coming out in Tankman in this one. He gets that victory, and even after so, he's still being very aggressive in the words that he's using and stuff like that. And then this is leading to Matt Cross now claiming that Tankman's a cheater. He said that this is not like Calvin Tankman, claiming that he poked him in the eye to take the victory here. Thoughts on the matchup and on Matt Cross's belief in what Tankman did to win this one?
Yeah, I thought this was a pretty all right match. Cross started out quickly in this one, being the smaller and quicker and more agile of the two men, although just barely. Tankman's pretty agile as well, but Cross was trying to use speed, trying to use aerial tactics and some strikes, but just couldn't get over Tankman's power and bulk. I mean, they backed up each other to do the trading forearms a couple times, and Cross would hit Tankman, and then Tankman would hit Cross, and that exchange was over. Cross would be back in the corner, sore, dazed, groggy. And I like the way this was laid out, that the littler guy probably shouldn't and can't hang with the big, strong guy in an exchange like that. In lots of other companies, we see them just do those exchanges sometimes 10 times in a match, where it's just completely unbelievable that they would do that, and that each wrestler would invite the other guy to have free punches at his face. Like, I mean, I don't like this spot in the first place, but at least it was, in this case, it was used fairly realistically. There were a few other things I liked on that. Tankman powerbombed Cross onto the apron when they were outside. That slowed down the speedster quite a lot, as such, also a such a dangerous spot, doing stuff on the apron. It makes me cringe every time, but then it's become pretty commonplace now too. And then eventually, yeah, as you mentioned, Tankman getting the pinfall with the, gave him the standing spinning elbow. And then when they were down on the mat, another power back elbow to the back of the head. That's a crushing blow to anybody. Pinfall, 1, 2, 3. Calvin Tankman advances past the first round of the Opera Cup to the second round. And then, yeah, the scene, that alleged thumb to the eye happened right at the end of that match, right before those two spinning elbows. You saw Cross going to the referee and pointing to his eye and pointing to Tankman, trying to get some form of justice out of this from the referee, but I don't think the referee saw anything. I'm not sure there was anything. I didn't see this thumb to the eye either, but Cross was sure playing it up. So what do we have developing here, Munson? Is Matt Cross going to turn into a heel with all his complaining here?
He very well could. Again, they're still kind of toeing the line that Tankman might go the same direction, joining with King Mo and Alex Kane. And as I was mentioning before, with Kane being named as a standby, there's got to be something in place here where Kane has intent to find his way into this Opera Cup one way or another. How that's going to unfold, we don't know yet. But again, they are teasing the ideas here. I'm curious to see where it all goes. There seems to be a lot more fleshed out kind of story to what's going on in the Opera Cup, a lot more highlighted here. Definitely curious to see where it all goes. We still got some opening round matchups to come in the coming weeks as well too. Some great competitors that are taking place in this Opera Cup. But yeah, great thing for DeKalvin Tangman to make it to the next round and allowing Matt Cross to continue to have something going for him moving forward as well too. So I think it'd be interesting to see where Matt Cross takes this complaint going into next week's episode. But Pop Smokes, now to our favorite part of this entire episode of Ring Respect Radio. I just about dropped my beer on the floor when I saw this segment come up on TV. But fucking heavy got to have a promo on MLW TV. It doesn't get much better than that. And as Bud put it, that pop he got in Philly was almost as awesome as when he drank his first beer. I gotta say, seeing Art Bud Heavy on MLW television in a backstage promo was almost as awesome as the beer that was in my hand at that point. How about you?
And so immediately soon after we had him on Ring Respect Radio too. What do you think, Bunsen? Is that a coincidence? I don't really think so. I think Bud's hitting the big time, and I think we're helping him there.
I sure hope so. Maybe Court Bauer's been checking out Ring Respect Radio a little bit and understands the popularity of at least of Bud Heavy anyway. I don't know about the two of us, but maybe this is just a stepping stone. He gets Bud Heavy in there and inevitably, hey Bud, get our foot in the door. They could use some more commentary guys, some guys who know how to talk shit. Maybe you need a couple of ringside boys to help you out, a ring crew or something like that. Boxers have them, but Heavy needs it too. Give us a call, man. You know where we're at. But I loved it. It was great. I mean, I couldn't say how awesome this was because we had him on the show, and then a week later, literally, and this comes out. I was sitting there watching this with my wife, and even she goes, "Hey, isn't that guy that you just interviewed on your show there?" She's like, "That's him." And I'm like, "Yes, dear, that is him." I was like, "That's our Bud Heavy right there, drinking a beer and having fun." Man, he looked great on there. Good old fashioned time. Man, Bud Heavy is just fun. I mean, he's a great dude.
Well, and the other thing is too that as we talked about with Bud Heavy, we're interested in enhancement talent because it is extremely important to every wrestling show. But that's the other thing about being a job guy is that you can be a job guy for a while, but eventually, if you get over and you get over with the fans, you might just get a little spot as a featured guy. And maybe that's what's happening with Bud Heavy right now. I really hope it is because he's such a good guy and such a hard worker and all that. But that just goes to show you, keep your nose to the grindstone, keep working hard, keep being a good guy and a good co-worker and co-wrestler in the back, and maybe you might get your opportunity. Maybe he just had a short spot with Alicia on this show in which he was interrupted by Caesar Duran's henchmen and all that. But hey, everybody's got to start somewhere. He never had an on-camera spot before, and he's got one now. Good for Bud Heavy. Go for it, man. And I hope he gets featured a little bit better and a little more in the weeks and months to come.
Yeah, we better get him back on Ring Respect Radio right away before he becomes too big for a little show like ours.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bud Heavy, congratulations, man, from the both of us. We're happy to see it working out for you, dude. From there, though, yeah, you mentioned about the promo getting cut off a little bit early by Cesar Duran's henchman there. So that led us into the next segment in his office. Cesar Duran's office, Alicia, too, is brought in, who he refers to as Alicia Tout, which she firmly corrects him. It seems to be the ongoing thing in Cesar Duran's office about getting people called by their wrong name there. They talk about journalism. Alicia wants to be able to do an interview with him. He talks about the expose that she brought out and stuff like that, and about how, her relationship with Richard Holiday and everything like that. And the plan is he's going to make her watch the matchup tonight. He wants her out there to watch what King Muertes has in store for Richard Holiday.
Yeah. So isn't this interesting? I think he plans on hurting Richard Holiday through Alicia too. I'm not sure if we have any confirmation onto whether they're actually a romantic item or anything like that. I know Caesar thinks they are, but it's very interesting, and he's really flexing his power around MLW. I wanted to just track to one little segment that we missed there too, that
Nope.
was the backstage camera catching Joseph Samael and Jacob Fatu.
Yes, shit. Sorry, man.
No, it's
Yeah.
okay. Yelling in the back of the arena backstage area. And this was very telling too because Fatu was frustrated, yelling about Hammerstone and screaming about his rage that he lost this match. But what Samael was repeatedly saying was, get your head back in the game and get ready for War Chamber. And it was a little bit of a pep talk by Samael, a tough love pep talk, getting right in Fatu's face and saying, you're our warrior and you're our machine and you're our killer. We need you for War Chamber. And he talked Fatu back into it. By the end of their short chat there, Fatu was back to Hail Contra and all the rest of it. I think that was an important little bit that the cameraman happened to see in the background. We get to see everything apparently fine with Contra Unit too, and Fatu on the same page. I know there had been some speculation about whether he might stay with MLW or whether he might stay with Contra Unit. Well, we're kind of getting confirmation that he probably is, for the near future at least, and that makes me feel good.
Yeah, and I'm glad you went back and brought that up, because I definitely forgot it in my notes here, Pop Smokes, and that would have been a shame not to mention it. Great segment, as always. Goes without saying, Joseph Samael, Fatu, great when they're doing conversations, and that pep talk was excellent. And again, bringing up the idea that there seems to be this roaming cameraman that's now become kind of active with the show. He's getting in there mysteriously behind the scenes, capturing this footage that normally wouldn't get caught. I like how that's unfolding. I think it's a nice touch to the MLW program, and I like what they're doing with it. And mad props to the other video bro out there that's getting his just dues in MLW right there.
Yeah, maybe we can get a spot with him, Munson. We can be his roving cameraman.
I'm down anytime. I mean, my phone's always it's always on, so give us a shout. So now we get to our main event of the evening. This is the Caribbean Championship match, King Muertes versus Richard Holiday. Would Richard Holiday have it in him to be able to survive the menace of King Muertes? I mean, you would think on any given day, King Muertes should be able to really take the fight to Richard Holiday, and this be a very equal matchup in every sense of the word. But again, with Holiday having taken the beat down at the beginning of the show, you've got to imagine favor on the side of King Muertes. Alicia Tude at ringside with Cesar Duran. He's got his bodyguards there. He's moved some of the fans from ringside. They're pouring champagne and watching this match up there. I made a note here where I said the match itself is good. There is the match ended up probably being better than I expected it to be, considering Holiday's injury. But this is another example of where maybe the segment itself exceeded the match itself, kind of thing. The unfolding story that they're playing on here, I think, was even more intriguing than the full match itself. And I'm not being negative about this. I liked it. I thought it was well played out. It was a good idea. Again, as arrogant and cocky as Holiday's been, he's kind of been toeing that line of becoming a babyface. And I think this more so than ever solidifies him in that babyface, that sympathetic type way. I thought it was the match. It rolled out nicely. King Muertes is a beast. I love this guy. I love his look. Yeah. I love his entrance. I love the match that they were putting on. And even when Holiday put Muertes up into that torture rack and spun him around for that spinning neckbreaker, I thought, holy shit, Richard Holiday is going to walk away with this thing. And he didn't quite get it. In the end, yes, it took some interference and a little bit of beatdown, but Richard Holiday coming up short, and we have a new Caribbean champion in King Muertes. During the matchup, too, we went to a picture-in-picture backstage. There's a fight breaking out. Hammer and Duca and the members of Contra all battling backstage. There was a lot to unpackage in this main event here between promos, storyline, the match itself. I mean, you would normally think this might be a little bit of a clusterfuck, but I think they pulled it together nicely in a way that didn't turn it into one, and it ended up being a really good segment that paid off very well.
Sure, that's a good way to put it. I agree with that, that it was a match, but with a larger segment all around it, too. And it was kind of neat to have the storyline being developed in front of the live crowd, and you could the fact that you could see Duran and Attu from the hard cam sitting on the opposite side of the ring amongst the fans and everything. It kind of looked neat that way. I thought this was one of the better Mil Muertes matches we've seen. There's nothing fancy about his style. He's a brawler all the way. It's a lot of kicks, a lot of punches, a lot of heavy body slams, and not really anything more fancy than that, but it's not needed when you're a 300-pound, 6-foot-2 Mexican guy with a mask. He's terrifying in his character, and you see him dripping that blood out of his mouth into the skull at the beginning. It looks like some heavy metal concert from the 80s or something. Really quite excellent. Muertes controlled a whole ton of this match, as we had Holiday set up with the injury and the sympathy angle. Even there was one point where Muertes had Holiday down on the mat, and Holiday was trying to do the timeout and begging off and stuff like that. I thought Holiday was trying to lure Muertes into something, but no, he was just on the ropes real bad at that point in the match, and just begging off from this monster Muertes. Anyway, this was good stuff. I also really, really liked the spot that you mentioned when Holiday took Muertes off the top rope in that torture rack, gave him the neck buster. I thought that might have been the finish, but it was a very close 2 count. And then, as we saw, as you mentioned, Ikiro Kwan comes out with a couple of members of the Sente Death Squad, and he delivers the spin kick to Holiday outside the ring. Muertes hits that straight to hell face buster on the concrete floor, throws him back in the ring, pinfall. There you go, new Caribbean champion, King Muertes. Pretty decent match. Pushed the storyline along. Got Holiday looking a little more baby face-ish, had a title change, had the Contra unit attacking Hammer and his boys in the back. I mean, this was a loaded match and a loaded segment, but I think it all came off pretty well. It was pretty busy to watch. You had your mind on a few things as well as the match, but I don't think it was overdone. They packed a lot of content into this. This was around an 11 or 12-minute match as well, and I think well done by MLW. Now, I'm not sure if we're going to go forward with the Caribbean Championship as being something that King Muertes is going to have multiple defenses of on TV, or if that will kind of fade off into the background. But I don't think Holiday needs that belt at this time. It was a good adornment for his character for a time there, and was giving him some good heel heat and putting down the Caribbean people and what's his name there that he had the strap match with
Savio Vega.
Savio Vega got some good heat off of that, but yeah, I don't think Holiday needs that belt if he's going to be a baby face, and he'll just be ready to join Hammerstone's team for War Chamber.
Yeah, and I'm very much looking forward to that. I also enjoyed watching Alicia pour the champagne on Cesar Duran's head at the end and walking off. I mean, she's showing a lot of I want to say that she's showing some mighty big balls there to dump that on the boss's head. He seems like he was already kind of PO'd at her, and she goes and pulls that off. So, kind of curious to see how that all unfolds for Alicia Toot in the coming weeks as well too. She was just the backstage interview queen, and now she has a little bit more to unfold as this storyline continues to unfold. So overall, I got to say these two episodes, MLW Fusion Alpha, definitely kept my interest. I liked them from top to bottom. Solid matches, good builds, a lot of new faces being introduced, and a lot of great things going on there. And it's nice to see it all in front of a crowd. It was one thing for us to be able to watch these things when they had no audience there and review them and stuff like that. But with an audience there, it really does make a hell of a lot of difference there, Pop Smokes. I'm really enjoying what MLW is throwing down, as always, as I'm sure you are as well too. Anything else to add to this episode?
No, I think the same thing as you. They're going along at a nice pace. They've got some new faces, they've got some new concepts, and they're doing some new things with some of the old faces as well. So, I mean, it's a lot of stuff for each episode, but they managed to pace it pretty good through there. And I think the booking and the laying out of the matches continues to be good. You know me, Munson. I much prefer live wrestling to wrestling on TV, but if I'm going to watch a wrestling show on TV, I still like MLW better than all the other options that we have out there. So I like their sports-based presentation. It has some fun and some silliness in the background as well as professional wrestling always does, but not too much. It's used nicely here and there. And this is a good product, and I like MLW, and I'm constantly excited to see what's coming up on the next episodes.
Yeah, and we got a lot of great things that are going to unfold in the coming weeks. Looking forward to being able to review those and recap those with you guys here on Ring Respect Radio. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the show here today. If you haven't done so already, remember to click that subscribe button down below. Go check out MLW Fusion Alpha episodes up on YouTube. And you can also now catch both of the matches from MLW Fightland up on YouTube as well, too. So you can check out the Fatu versus Hammerstone match, and also the four-way matchup for the MLW Middleweight Championship as well, which are now available. And continue to just check them out on social media. There's a lot of news floating around about plans that they have and crossovers that they're going to do, especially coming up with All Japan Pro Wrestling and stuff too. So a lot of great things coming out of MLW. So we will continue to recap and review those here on our show. We will continue to try to bring in people such as Bud Heavy as special guests here and help those enhancement talents as they also help us continue to rise our views as well too. Thank you once again, everybody, for tuning in to our show, and we look forward to seeing you again very soon. Take care.
Don't go putting them down. Redneck.